I'm an addict and my name is Usman. And before I start, I want to ask everybody just turn to somebody close by you and give them a nice, big, juicy hug. Stand on up, man. I'm still an addict and my name is Usman. And I thank you for giving somebody a hug. When I first came around, they said that that's an integral, vital part of being being a humble person, practicing some humility, defined not as me thinking less of myself, but thinking of myself less, you know. It's a good way to ensure that everybody can feel connected up in here, you know, and somebody probably, whenever this many of us get together, really needed that hug, too. I want to thank God for giving me this opportunity to come and share my experience, strength, and hope, because I've long since become convinced of what I've been taught, that the only way I get to keep what I have is by giving it away. It's not one of the ways, you know, not one of many ways, not a possible way, but the only way I get to keep what I have is by giving it away. So this is a blessing for me. Even though it's 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, I really appreciate the opportunity to come and share my experience, strength, and hope, because I truly need to keep what I have, you know. Some preliminary matters. I want to thank Akbar and Derek for putting the pedal to the metal and getting me down here on time, you know. You know, I want to thank the programming committee and everybody concerned with the convention itself for giving me this opportunity. And I see some friends from Newark. Thank you for coming down and giving me good, precise directions to get here, too, you know. So, anyway, they told me to just come down. Rocky told me just come down and talk. So that's what I'm going to do. I don't know what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to just talk, you know. And I just left an affair that my youngest son put on, you know. And he told me about it yesterday. And he said, Dad, if you could make it, that's why I just got here. He said, if you could make it, it would be real nice. And I said, see, that's why you should give people advance notice. I got to be in Atlantic City. You know, I can't be two places at once. There's such a thing as advance notice. If you told me in sufficient time, then I could have came and supported you. And I had all these reasons why I couldn't go to my son's thing. But then I got in touch with the fact that I had a track record of being deadbeat dad for a while, you know, and we have these things called amends too up in here, you know. And as I considered it and I thought about it more and more, I thought it'd be a very nice thing if I were to show up to his affair, you know. And so that's what I did, and I'm just so glad I did, you know. I had a wonderful time, and the best part about it was seeing him light up just because his father came in there. So that was really special for me, you know. As I stand here and I talk, I got in touch with what I really want to talk about. I want to talk about some gratitude up here, you know. You know, a real good friend of mine died recently, and then he was followed by another good friend, and then another friend of mine from New Orleans died, and then I found out that somebody else I knew and loved died, and I just finished visiting Jamil in the hospital yesterday. You know, he's over in Beth Israel Hospital in Manhattan, and my wife got laid off, and we are broken in Dick's Hat Band. And I mean real broke, you know what I mean? You know how you get past broke? You'd be glad if you was just plain old garden variety broke again, because then you could at least see some light at the end of the tunnel. So we way past broke, and it talks about it in the ninth tradition, and it works how and why. It talks about how some of us are going to be broke for the foreseeable future. We're going to be broke for years and years. the kind of broke I've been recently, you know, and I got all of these things happening, but through it all, I'm very, very grateful. I'm very, 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 very grateful, you know. I'm grateful for no particular reason, kind of grateful. Let me explain what I'm talking about. You know, before Narcotics Anonymous entered my life, I always used to have permission to be grateful. I had to be able to point to something, some situation, some event, somebody, something outside of myself in order for me to be grateful. You know, I had to hit the picket, do something. It had to be some. I didn't have a internally generated sense of gratitude. I didn't have any gratitude that welled up from inside me. You know, the glass always seemed half empty. You know, and it always seemed to me that if I was going to say I was grateful, I would have to be able to follow it with a because. You know, like, I'm grateful because I just got a raise. I'm grateful because of this. I'm grateful because of that. But I never had the ability to just plain be grateful. It had a lot to do with the fact that I'm an addict, and as such, I wake up believing in my very fiber that I got to have something different. I got to have something different. And I just thought I found it in the drugs. And that's why they asked me, they said, what happens to a man or to a woman who wakes up believing they got to have something different? Thought they found it in drugs when you take the drugs away. What happens to a man or woman who believes they got to have, just wake up thinking, is this all there is? What, just another day? You know, just chewing to be chewing? Just what, just go to work, go home, make a, what? Is this it? Wake up feeling like that. And then you get to the point where, you think the answer's in drugs or something. You put the drugs down only to realize you don't know how to live with or without the drugs. Right? So what do you do? What do you do? Thank God for Narcotics Anonymous, because only once I got in touch with this program was I able to get in touch with the fact that I was going through life the wrong way around. I was going through life the wrong way around because I always had to be able to point to something material outside of me in order to feel some sense of gratitude. And when I got here, you said, listen, that's why you're in the grip of a hopeless dilemma. A dilemma is bad enough. A dilemma itself is bad. That's bad news. Because a dilemma is like, do you want to be stabbed to death or shot to death? That's a dilemma. Because either way, it's bad news, you know what I mean? But they said you're in a hopeless dilemma, in the grip of a hopeless dilemma. And the reason why I've always been in the grip of a hopeless dilemma is because I've always reached for material solutions to my spiritual challenges. Always. You know? And I mean all kinds of material solutions. You know, two-legged type material solutions, four-wheel type of material solutions, all kind of material solutions, geographical material solutions, shop till you drop material solutions, eat till you can't eat no more material solutions, you know, watch videos all night long even though you got to get up and go to work material solutions. Material solutions, looking outside of myself for some sense of validation, looking outside of myself for some feeling of being alive. Not knowing how to get in touch just to be in touch. Not knowing how to get in touch with just being in the grace of God. Not understanding what a wonderful, wonderful thing it is just to be in the grace of God. Forgetting the fact that I don't make the planets revolve. You know, I don't make the sun burn bright but just right, not too hot to fry me up. Make the water pour, but not so much to flood me out. And at the same time, make the blood course through my veins, my lungs pump, my heart beat, you know, my eyes blink. You know, that's a masterful job that God does, you know. But even with him doing it, I sometimes lose touch with the fact that he has time for me. I can understand how he can make this whole thing work, but sometimes I lose touch with the fact that he's got time for me. You know? And I forget the fact that I'm living under the grace of God. You know? It talks about it in the 12th step in the basic text. It says, we received our recovery as a gift from the God of our understanding. And in the 11th step in the basic text, it says, our spiritual condition, listen to this language, our spiritual condition is the basis, our spiritual condition is the basis for a successful recovery, right? That offers unlimited growth. Man, that's good news. You understand? I've always wanted unlimited growth, but I always misplaced my faith. You understand? So before I could get unlimited growth, I would limit myself. I would limit myself because I would always misplace my faith, and as a result of misplacing my faith, not only that, because I misplaced my faith on the one hand, and on the other hand, because I'm an addict, what gets my attention gets me, for real, on a deep level. I gotta look where I'm going, because I go where I'm looking, and then I get caught up, and I can't stop. So I don't get the unlimited growth, because I don't put my spiritual condition first. I put my material condition first. And not only that, I get compulsive and obsessive and totally self-centered about it. You can't even tell me once I'm caught up. You know you all caught up. Can't you see you all caught up? Everybody else can see you all caught up. Why can't you see that you all caught up? I'll go on a cliche run on you in a minute. What you need to do is keep the focus. You need to get some business in mind. After all, this too takes time. I keep coming back. I go on a cliche run on you, you know, if you try to put me in touch, you know. But I can't afford not to put my spiritual condition first, you know. And the good thing about our literature, if you don't have this literature, you should get it. These are a couple of books about me up here. This is this is my autobiography. They call it the basic text. It's really my autobiography. And then we have my sequel. It works how and why. That's more about Usman, right? The good thing about it is if you think you're on the right track and you keep reading, the literature will confirm it. So I just read about how in the 11th step in the basic text it says our spiritual condition is the basis for a successful recovery that offers unlimited growth. Now here's the 12th step and it works out why. And look how similar this point is. We saw that by making our spiritual development our primary focus, other aspects of our lives would progress naturally as they were meant to all along. Naturally. Natural development. Well, in my particular case, it took me a long time to get to a point where I was even willing to put my spiritual development as my primary focus. You know? I'm not talking about being able to intellectually read and understand our literature. I'm not even talking about having the ability to get before a group of people and share like Shakespeare on some stuff. Right? And to a point where somebody says, man, he really understands. Did you hear that 11th step Usman did? Oh, it was tight. I'm not talking about mentally getting with this stuff. I'm talking about when it gets to your heart, to where you have internalized it and you really believe that your spiritual development needs to be your primary focus. You know what I'm saying? Now, for a long, 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 long time, I could talk about things better than I could feel them. you know. For a long, long, long time, I could intellectually understand why my spiritual development needed to be my primary focus, but meanwhile, back at the ranch, it wasn't. You know what I mean? First of all, I had to go through my Monty Hall period with God. Yeah. Let's make a deal. God, this is me. I've been good. You know I've been good because you God. You know everything. So you know how good I've been. So hit me off. Right? And basically, what I was doing, even sometimes when I was calling myself being sincere in my prayers and meditations, you know, I was really just trying to get God to hook me up. That's what I wanted. I wanted God to hook me up. Hook me up. I'm doing the right things. I'm going to meetings. I'm doing all this knee work, step work, work. So hook me up. Hook me up already. You supposed to be God. Why is it taking you so long? Why haven't you hooked me up? What do I have to do for you to hook me up? I'm not using anymore. And what I had to get in touch with was the fact that although on an intellectual level I was saying, God, your will, not mine, be done, in my heart I really didn't mean that. What I meant was, God, out of my mouth, your will, not mine, be done, but in my heart, hook me up. Hook me up. Give me what I want. Give it to me when I want it. As long as I want it. In the way I want it. That's what I really want you to do, God. That way I know you're on the case. If you don't hook me up, God, I really, you know, I don't know. So could you please hook me up? That's where I was really coming from. So it took me a long time for my heart to catch up with my head. You know, I mentioned a lot of friends passing recently. That's one of the areas in which I struggled. I struggle, you know. That's where I get a little shaky sometimes, you know, with whether or not God's on the ball, you know. Sometimes I struggle with God's will, and those are the most obvious times when it becomes apparent to me that a lot of times I'm coming out of this not really bad. You know, where I say, God, your will, not mine, be done. But not really. You know, God, so-and-so suffering. If it be your will to take them home, I understand. But not really. Not really. You know, I just be multi-phasing. You know, I really want people I love to be here as long as I'm here. Care whether they suffering or not. I don't want them to suffer too much. You understand what I'm saying? But I don't want to miss them. So I want them here. You see? But I need to talk about, that's an obvious level. But I found that on a more subtle level, I play the same games. You know. For a long time in recovery, I would say that, you know, I'm living by the grace of God. You know, God's divine intervention, His unmerited favor. But really, I was living by the grace of my disease. That might take a little explaining. Let me explain what I'm talking about. You know, when I was a little boy, I had an uncle named Uncle Joe. He was one of those lunch bucket, salt of the earth, hard working type. Didn't talk too much, showed you what he was about by his actions type of man, you know. And my mother and father were divorced, so he used to try to step up and be like a surrogate father on some days, you know. And the way he would do it was he was big on fishing. He loved to fish. He loved to wake you up when it was still dark. drag your little ass out in the middle of the night and go to the boat when it was still dark, sun wasn't even up, and go way out in the middle of the water and go fishing. I hate fishing. You couldn't pay me any amount of money to go fishing. But anyway, Uncle Joe used to take me fishing. Me and Uncle Joe in the boat. In the dark. You couldn't even see the line. And then he had the nerve to go to sleep. But my little scared ass in the boat looking for Gila monsters and shit to jump up any minute, and he's asleep. Anyway, the thing that really got to me, though, was that I thought the whole idea of fishing was to get the fish from the water into the boat. I don't know where I got that notion from, but that's what I believe. You go fishing, you want to get the fish out of the water into the boat. And what used to really tick me off would be when we got to what I thought was supposed to be the exciting part. When I see the line jumping and everything, I get happy. I say, Uncle Joe, wake up. Because he was asleep. Wake up, Uncle Joe, we got a nibble. We got one. You know, I'm ready for him to jump up and get in his Captain Ahab bag, you know, and reel in the big one. And he would kind of like half come out of his sleep and mumble something about, give us some line, boy, give us some line. I said, wait, we got a fish. He said, boy, give us some line. See that little switch over there? Hit that latch, hit that latch. And I'd hit the latch. He said, that's it, boy, give us some line, give us some line. And it used to really confuse me, because now it seemed like we had them and now the fish was hauling ass. That's the way it seemed to me, because we just gave them this line, right? And now the fish is going in the opposite direction from the boat. I don't get it. This is what I meant earlier when I said it used to be confusing to me. But here's what Uncle Joe knew that I didn't appreciate. He knew that it really didn't matter how the fish twisted and turned, you know, and ducked and dodged. Sometimes the fish would jump clean out the water, make it look like he'd gotten away and something. Uncle Joe was content to leave the fish in its element, you know, because what he knew that I didn't appreciate was that the fish was hooked. You see? And he knew that as long as the fish was hooked, that the fish, even though the fish felt that he was free and still living by the grace of the fish god, Uncle Joe knew that the fish was actually, in point of fact, living by the grace of Uncle Joe. Right? He's living by the grace of Uncle Joe, right? And anytime Uncle Joe got ready, he could reel it in, cut his head off, rip his guts out, and the only choice he'd leave the fish was whether it was going to be sliced, diced, fried, baked, fricasseed, you know, filleted. That's it. Because the fish was truly living by the grace of Uncle Joe. Well, the reason I'm telling this story is because Uncle Joe is a lot like the disease of addiction. Right? The disease of addiction will allow me to run around thinking that I'm free, living by the grace of God, and all the while I'm still hooked. I'm still hooked up on material solutions. I'm still in the grip of a hopeless dilemma because I still think that my solutions are material in nature. I am no different from the fish hooked by Uncle Joe. Uncle Joe was deep. He had what you call a bait box. Yeah. He had a bait box. I said, Uncle Joe, what's in the bait box? He said, well, boy, in the bait box, I have all kind of lures. Listen to the language, lures. I said, well, what is a lure? You know, because some lures weren't even food. You understand what I'm saying? In other words, some stuff that would lure a fish wasn't even natural for the fish to consume. Just like coke and dope. That's not a natural product for me to consume. But it was a lure. So he had all kind of lures in the bait box. You know why? He said, you need all kind of lures because you have all kind of fish. Just like we come in here with different degrees of sickness and rates of recovery. Just like there's no model for the recovering addict. Right? So, he said, you have all kind of fish. You got some plain old regular dumbass fish. Just a dumbass fish. He said, sometimes, boy, I catch the same fish over and over. Just catch his ass, throw him back in, catch him again. Same bait. Catch the same fish with the same bait. And the reason we can laugh about it is because we went back to the same cop man who sold us the same garbage on the same night. Just old dumbass fish. He said, now some fish get to a point where they no longer bite that long, slimy stuff no more. You got to come a different way with them. You got to kind of dress it up. He said, I can't give them the worm. So I give them this little cute looking little fruit fly looking thing. He ain't gonna bite at the worm. He won't bite at the worm anymore. See? But he'll bite at this shiny fruit fly looking thing all day long. Because it looks pretty. It's appealing. It appeals to his senses. So he'll bite at it. We can catch this particular fish all day long. All we have to do is change the lure. I learned a lot from Uncle Joe. And a lot of what he taught applies up in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. Because if you stop and think about it, we've got all kind of lures up in here. The disease of addiction has its own bait box. Sometimes it lures you with coke and dope. Right? But just like it says in step one, you know, our addictions ran much deeper than just simple drugs. Sometimes the disease of addiction will lure you with two-legged bait. Yeah. The disease of addiction will serve you up your flavor just like you like it. Because it knows your flavor. Because it's you. So it knows what you like. So it's not going to reach into the bait box and pull out some bait that you don't like. It's going to reach into the bait box and pull out your flavor just like you like it. You know, you could be minding your business talking all that strong stuff. I'm strong in my spot. I stand on principle. Yes, I do. I'm strong. And then your flavor walks up. And it's a new ball game. Because you was able to stand strong in your spot because you wasn't dealing with your flavor. You ain't like what was being served up anyway. It wasn't your bait. You gonna mess around judging other people. How can they nibble on that? Damn. You know what I mean? Girl, I don't know what you see in him. Couldn't be me. Mm-mm. I would have been left him. Oh, yeah. Man, I can't understand what you still doing with her after all she put you through. You must be some kind of brand new 1998 version of a fool. You still hanging in there? Because that's not your flavor. We want to see what happens when your flavor drives up. Drives up. Yeah. We want to see if you're going to be preaching, judging, and moralizing then when your flavor drives up. So you got two-legged bait. Got four-wheel variety bait. Sometimes the disease of addiction will come at you like that. You need a new car. You need to trade that jalopy in. How long are you going to run around in that hoopty? What you need to do just trade. I got a car that's 85. There's nothing wrong with it. But from time to time, my mind tells me that it's too old. I said there is nothing wrong with the car. It does exactly, if you looked up the definition of a car, that's what it does. Takes you from point A to point B. You know, it's got some seats in there, lights, sound system. It does what cars are supposed to do. But from time to time, my mind tells me you need a new car. After all, you're making progress. How anybody gonna know you're making progress? You're driving the same old car. You need to let people know you need to get a new car. So you got four-wheel variety bait. You got sponsorship bait. You got some people hooked up on sponsorship bait. You have some people who won't even fart unless the sponsor said, go ahead and fart. You gonna fart now. You gonna fart? Go on and fart. Yeah. I don't know why y'all laughing at me. I'm coming out the literature. I'm laughing at me. This ain't none of my stuff. I told you I was a dumb fish. I had to come in here. Listen, this is page 100. It works on why. Listen to this language. While our sponsor will provide us with guidance, we must apply the principles of the program for ourselves and arrive at our own decision. Because in the end, we are the ones who must live with our conscience. Now, in order to do so comfortably, we must decide what is and what is not morally acceptable in our lives. That's the literature talking. That ain't me talking. So you got some people hooked up on sponsorship bait. And some people hooked up on clean time bait. Yeah.
Please, come on.
You could tell. Some people can't even share without telling you how much time they got. Well, I came around when it was just me and the white book. There's three addicts in the whole world. And we used to all know one another. You know? Or they talk this, all the crazy stuff. They say, look, they suffer from the clean time heebie-jeebies. Yeah, here's somebody share with the clean. I'm coming up on some clean time. Ain't that a bitch? That make no sense. You coming up on? Look, if you got 2 minutes, you coming up on 3 minutes, right? You think about it. Well, coming up on some clean. If you high right now, you coming up on some clean time. Every
Everybody is coming up on some clean time. I don't care who you are. Whether you clean or high, you coming up on some clean time. So what? Not only that, but what you going to do about it? I mean, so you come up on some clean time, so what, you now you what, you can do something different? What is it that you can do different now that you coming up on some clean time? I'm coming up on 5 years. So what? Gonna take your mucky ass to a meeting. You're not gonna get to a point where you recovered up with an ED on the end. Where you no longer fit the literature. Now you are what? A power greater than yourself? You know? I was feeling kind of shaky, so I talked to myself. I needed to be delivered, so I prayed to me to answer my own prayers. Man, clean time, heebie-jeebies. Some people get hooked up on social acceptability, thinking that they have arrived. They usually let you know that they're about to get hooked up because they tell you, well, you know, I have a life today outside of NA. You know, there's more to life than just meetings, don't you? There's more to life than just NA. I've got responsibilities. I've got this. I've got that. They're letting you know that they're about to get hooked up on social acceptability or being diverted by money, property, and prestige. You see? And that's why they say, you know, they say, clean time does not equal recovery. Social acceptability does not equal recovery. Money, property, and prestige does not equal recovery. Who you're sponsored by doesn't equal recovery. If you work all 12 steps, that's not the end, it's just the beginning. Because that doesn't, you know, all of this is because nothing equals recovery. You could get your own pot and throw whatever mix you want up in there, and it's nothing going to equal recovery because nothing equals recovery. Nothing. That's the short version of it. Fuck it. Nothing. There's no way out. There's nowhere to go. You just got to keep recovering. From now on, that's it. Just keep recovering. Yeah, because your family's going to ask you, how long are you going to keep this up? Huh? I mean, what? What is this, a cult? What are you going to go to these meetings the rest of your life? Yeah. Yeah, that's right. There's no way out. How many of these little medallion things you're going to get? You got a whole jar of them now. I mean, come on. They make you feel kind of shaky if you really feed into them. You get defensive, like, well, I don't go to quite as many meetings as I used to. You know, you find yourself trying to justify and rationalize why you got to go recover. Yeah, so you don't lose your mind. You know, this thing is a process. It's not an event. You don't get to a point where you arrive at and you just safe. It's like breathing. You got to keep breathing. You know? You got to keep breathing. You breathe yesterday, good. Don't hold your breath today. And it's advisable for you to take a few gulps of air tomorrow. You want to continue this thing called life. You know? Keep breathing. Oh, well, you know, my heart beat yesterday. Good. Better keep on beating. You better keep on going to meetings, working with your sponsors, working steps. There's no way out. This is a journey, not a destination, you know. So I'm real grateful today because I'm just now starting to reach a point in my recovery where I am being less and less hooked by the disease of addiction. You know, I'm just getting to where I'm starting to be able to be all right being who I am, being me. With what I have, with my circumstances, with my issues, the good, the bad, the ugly, and being able to rock and roll with whatever. I'm just now getting to a point where it's not so important what happens to me and around me, you know, as it is how I respond to them, you know. I'm just getting to a point where it's not the end of the world if I'm broke, you know. Two of my favorite words, a big deal. So you broke. It ain't like you never knew what to ever knew what to do with some money anyway. You know, because I can feed into my, oh, I'm broke. Oh, man, I'm broke. Like I wasn't going to get broke in record time anyway. You know, I mean, that's all new stuff for me, money management. And we were talking earlier about paying bills. I told a friend of mine, he said, oh, man, I'm broke. I'm broke. I'm broke, man. I just got paid and I'm broke. I said, you was broke when you was using, too. At least now you're paying bills, right? At least now you can walk with some dignity, some self-respect, some integrity, some character. You can hold your head up. At least now your family loves you. They're smiling at you. You're doing the right things. You get less threatening mail. There's some good up in it. You know what I mean? So broke is not that bad. Not if you're living right. It's not that bad. You know, if you got your roof over your head, food to eat, God will meet you at the level of your needs. I haven't had a bad day in recovery. I have not. They told me when I first came around, they said, listen, every day is a good day. If you don't believe it, try missing one. Yeah. So that's how I feel about it. Every day is a good day. Every day presents its own challenges, you know. And a lot of times what I perceive to be stumbling blocks are actually little spiritual stepping stones. You know, we talk about how important it is to practice these spiritual principles, but you can't practice them without situations. How would you ever really know whether you're tolerant if you never had stuff you had to tolerate? If everybody just did everything you wanted to be done when you wanted it to happen and the way you wanted it to happen, where would the there wouldn't even be a need for the word tolerance. How would you practice patience, which is working while waiting without worrying? How would you ever practice patience if everything came in my time? That's why they said in the beginning of the book, the full fruit of a labor of love comes in the harvest, and that always comes in the right season. That's telling me that it's going to come in the appointed hour, in the fullness of time, in God's time, not my time. Because I want everything yesterday. Even if I only think of it today, I still want it yesterday. I want to reap without sowing. You too, huh? Yeah. I don't want to do no work. I want to reap without sowing. You know, one of my favorite commercials, they had this commercial on TV, and this guy was going through the toll, and it said, Bob. And Bob could just drive straight on through. That's what I want. I want my own toll booth, say, Usman.
Okay.
Come on through. Come on, Usman. You know. And I'm using that as a metaphor for how a lot of days I don't want no drama. You know? I say I want to grow, but I don't want to grow. Does that make sense? You understand what I'm saying? I want to grow, but I don't want to have to grow to grow. I want to grow. No, I want to be grown, but I don't want to grow up to be grown. You understand what I'm saying? I don't want to do the work. Huh? I want to be grown. I want you to see me. I want you to respect me. I want you to say, that's a hell of a guy. That's a hell of a guy there, boy. But I don't want to do shit for that. I just want to be a hell of a guy. with no work. No fuss, no muss, no drama. I want to get paid without working. I just want to just show up. I want to show up and y'all can all bask in my glow and then pay me. I know it's sick. That's why I got to come here so I can talk about my sick ass. Because I just don't want to work, man. I don't know who invented work. Damn. I can't, you know, seem that they, with all the marvels of technology, just nobody should have to. Maybe if people want to work, those who want to work, work. You know, those could be the working people. Anyway, some people like to work. They have jobs for other people who just like to hang out. And we could just tell those people who work what we saw hanging out. Because they like to work anyway, right? You know what I mean? I'm getting silly, huh? That's all right. It's late. Shit. I should schedule people for 1 a.m. I get silly. You know, but anyway, I'm full of gratitude, you know, and the gratitude comes in, sister said, get serious. And the gratitude comes in the fact that, it's hard getting serious now. The gratitude comes in the fact that, you know, I don't as much have to look outside of myself for a reason. You know, even if I'm being silly, that's wonderful because it says it in our literature, you know, that's part of a spiritual awakening. When you regain the ability to laugh and find great joy and beauty in your surroundings. You know, I lost a lot of that. It talks about it in the 7th step in the Works on Why. It says, you know, we came in here with a spiritual void. You know, the spiritual light had gone out of my eyes. My spirit was dead. Wasn't nothing funny. I wasn't laughing. It wasn't nothing funny. I couldn't get high no more. That was terribly depressing for me. I was depressed for years over that. Really, a long time. I was recovering, but I wasn't happy about it. That's right. I wasn't happy about that, you know. I wasn't happy about it at all. I'm getting upset now just thinking about it. Yeah, so look, let me find what I was talking about. Where it talks about that, you know, it talks about the signs, how you can tell when your spirit is coming back alive, the signs, you know. It says, once again, you can live with dignity. That's some big stuff, man. That's important, man, to be able to live with dignity. I'm not talking about how much money you have and all of that. I'm not talking about how's your love life. I'm not talking about all of those outside in forms of validation. I'm just talking about being able to walk with your head up. Live with dignity. You know what I'm saying? Where the little kids call you Mr. again. You know what I mean? Just living with some dignity. You know? Little strangers say sir and madam to you because you look respectable again. Clean, you're not stinky, all of that. The ability to love ourselves, you know. It took me a long time to start practicing loving myself. You know, you could be in recovery and really not be loving yourself. You're still smoking cigarettes. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah, you know, because the reason I'm sharing that is because there was a long time in recovery. Well, even, I'll put it like this. Every time we have a meeting, we say alcohol is a drug. Uh-huh. And most of us can't afford to be confused about this. Mm-hmm. That's the language we read. And that's because there was a long time when if you went into treatment and you were good, you got rewarded with drinking privileges. And does that sound crazy? I know it sounds crazy today, but this is what the state of recovery was back in the day. So if you were good, they said, well, you've been good. Go on and have a few beers. Come on back. Can you just imagine such a thing? You've been all right. Go on and have a few drinks. Just give you permission to go get some gateway drugs, some starter drugs. So they give the people permission to get the starter drugs. And, you know, if you use for a long time, the body turns all drugs into the same chemical reaction. And so it would just be a matter of time before the people with the starter drugs moved on to what they really like. And then they would overdo it. And then they didn't even keep statistics for all of us that we lost like that. But gradually, we as a fellowship began to wake up. And we said, you know, a lot of us are dying for others of us to live. We need to change the literature. Because most of us can't afford to be confused about this. That's where the language came from. We were dying, so we said we better change the literature because a lot of us are confused, and most of us can't afford to be confused about this because one is wet and one is dry. Bottom line, they both get you high, you know, and it really doesn't matter where you get on the merry-go-round, you're going to wind up dizzy. And then you get off the merry-go-round and say, damn, that red horse is a bitch. Damn. You getting ready to get on the merry-go? Don't fuck with the red horse. You know, like I know, get on the blue or the yellow or the white horse or something. Don't mess with that red horse. You'll get dizzy. Yeah. So what happened is, we had to let the literature catch up to us, right? So now, in recovery, once again, each of us have to ask ourselves, are we waiting for the literature to catch up? You know, before we realize that we're not loving ourselves. It says to love others, to laugh, to have peace of mind. Man, you could stop the presses right there. To have peace of mind. You know, a lot of days, peace of mind is a funny thing because a lot of times when you have peace of mind, you don't even realize it. Because it's been so long since you had all of that insanity in your mind that you don't even recognize peace of mind. This is like, does a fish see water? Fish doesn't even realize that there is such a thing as water till you take them out of the water. You don't even realize that you had peace of mind until you lose your peace of mind. You know? And a lot of times when you get your peace of mind back, it's a funny thing. And nothing special is happening, but you got peace of mind. And you really can't put a price on that. Because I don't ever want to go back to those non-stop tug-of-war fights with myself in my own mind to use or not to use. Should I go? Should I stay? Yeah, go. No, don't you dare go. You better stay. You know, loss of peace of mind is a hell of a thing. Sometimes you can lose your mind and don't nobody even know it. You look normal. That's why we gotta open up, because nobody can read a closed book. You can look like you have peace of mind until you open your mouth, and then we can tell. Like the invasion of the body snatchers, we say, done lost his mind. She done lost her mind. Usman done lost his mind. I'm all right with understanding that I can lose my mind. See, that's what used to throw me off before. If you don't realize you can lose your mind, you always think you got it. Because it never dawns on you that you can lose it. So you running around all night long, back and forth, like a fool, out of your monkey mind, thinking you're all right. Because you don't realize you can lose your mind. People coming up to you saying, you all right? Yeah, I'm all right. to me and I'm all right. Why you asking me that? Yeah, I'm all right. I don't even know why you asking me I'm all right. Of course I'm all right. No, we asking you, Usman, because you look like you've lost your mind. You acting kind of crazy. Have you paid any bills? When the last time you been home? Last time you ate? Last time you washed? That's why people ask those questions. You look like you've lost your mind. Because sanity is a fluid concept. It's not something you just grab and now you are. We now anoint you sane. You can now rest assured that you will be sane for the rest of your life. Go forth and be well. No, sanity comes and goes. Comes and goes. Sometimes sanity comes and goes in the same day. Sometimes sanity comes and goes in the same hour. Sometimes it comes and goes. That's why they talk about temporary insanity. Y'all laughing. They said, why you cut off the man's thing? I lost my mind for a minute. They said, oh, okay. That makes sense to us. Anybody cut off a man's thing must have been out of their mind. And they recognized it as a defense. Well, Your Honor, she temporarily lost her mind. Well, nobody temporarily loses their minds as well as we do. That's why after one of us temporarily loses our mind and you ask them, what happened? They say, I don't know. You say, I don't know. Because they don't know. Because they weren't there. Because they were out of their mind. So how would they know what happened? They weren't even there. You got to ask somebody else. Did you see him? Yeah, we saw him. He was running up down the street all night long. How did his mind? So peace of mind is a great thing, you know. There are a lot of things. There are a lot of things that go on in this recovery thing. There are a lot of gifts and what have you, you know. But the best thing, a lot of the best things, you know, you can't put a price on, like peace of mind. Like what we pray for twice a meeting, serenity. Serenity, you know. That's what the first step is about in large part. You know, the inability to maintain, the powerlessness to maintain serenity. You know, thinking that I got to have something different, not being able to hold on to serenity. You know, and all that thinking I have to have something different is just a call back to God. God's in the beginning, in the middle, and at the end. You know, and my mistakes that I've made my whole life is just misplacing my faith. You know, I get separated from God, I lose touch with God, and I get frightened. I get scared to death. Because fear comes from separation from God. So I get separated from God, and then I become afraid. And in that fear, I get addicted to certainty. And once I get hooked up with it being addicted to certainty, now if I can't see it, touch it, smell it, shoot it, smoke it, wear it, drive it, I don't want to buy into it. Because I'm too scared to let go of my addiction to the certainty. So why would, that's why they say there's a certain distorted sense of security in familiar pain. Because even though it's distorted, even though it's painful, you ever go up to somebody who's got a distorted sense of security in familiar pain and say, you know, you need to leave them. Listen to what they tell you. You don't know them like I know them. That's just their way. They don't mean anything by it. They just slapped the shit out of you. Don't pay that no mind. It didn't really hurt. Don't pay that no mind. That's just their way. They really love me to death. They'll be all right. That's the distorted sense of security
And underneath that is a fear of letting go of the certainty of what's familiar. It says in the basic text, change also involves the great source of fear, the unknown. And the unknown is just another backhanded way of describing God. I'm an addict. My name is Usman. Thanks for staying up with me. Thanks, man.
We'd like to thank the speaker.